Now, I am joined on the line by Niall Fim's very own political pundit, John Morgan. You will have heard John giving his expert opinions on Saturday, all of which I think bore fruit and were proved to be right. John, we'll have a look back over the machinations of the weekend and indeed some of the massacres that took place. We start with the local elections, John. Fianna Fáil coming out on top. Hello, John, are you with me?
Yes, I am, Donnie.
Yeah, Fianna Fáil coming out on top. I suppose Fine Gael, all in all, probably being reasonably happy. The Greens ecstatic. Labour lagging well behind, and Sinn Féin dropping massively from the previous standings. Where do you start with it?
Yeah, as you say, Donnie, I think in terms of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, probably nobody's made particularly decisive moves, and I suppose that's significant when you think about whether they were shaping up to see whether these local election results would give them anything to go on in terms of whether a general election would happen in the near future. Certainly, most of the 949 seats have been filled. Fianna Fáil, nearly 27% and 277 seats, and Fine Gael just over 25%, 253. Fianna Fáil expected largest party in the local elections. Fine Gael, the largest party across four councils in Dublin. I guess Fine Gael will be somewhat disappointed. Certainly, they talk about the extra 50 seats. They had reimagined that downward shortly before the election, but not the Leo bounce that they expected to get. As you say, neither will be ecstatic. They're both, I suppose, treading water is a phrase I've heard somebody using. Certainly, in terms of greater movement, the two bigger stories, of course, are the Greens on the one hand and Sinn Féin on the other. Without a doubt, only the Greens captured the imagination, the mood of the electorate this time around. We spoke on Saturday about the Dáil declaration of the climate emergency and what impact. We knew it would have an impact, Tony, but how it would have an impact, I wasn't sure. Was that vote going to be cannibalised? Was that vote, were the Greens' clothes going to be taken in some shape or form by the other parties? The answer by the electorate was no, that they trusted the Greens to take forward that vote. I think the Greens were extremely happy with extending the representation outside Dublin, which I think was a key objective. And of course, the Greens have done well across Europe, so their larger family will be happy. In terms of protecting that vote, only I think there was a very cleverly the Greens coined a phrase which was want green, vote green, and people seem to do that. And they've certainly extended that now very quickly after the election, saying want green, join green. So they're looking, of course, to try and maximise the impact by getting people to join the Greens and try to help take this agenda and this mandate forward. I even heard a variation of it used by Jonathan Barclay, the leader of the Greens in England and Wales. So that's certainly the Greens, Donnie. Sinn Féin will be a lot more disappointed in contrast.
And you would wonder in relation to Sinn Féin, because it's a thing that struck me on Saturday evening when I was travelling back from the RDS to the studio here, and I was trying to I suppose rationalised it in my head. Sinn Féin candidates, and this is no disrespect now to any candidate who was elected or any political party, but they are very visible on the ground in the wards and in the constituencies, and that did not transfer into votes this time. And the other question, John, and I'd be very interested in your take on this, is that 9.5%, 10%, 11%. Is that their actual, where they sit in Irish politics? I mean, was the bounce that they got, we'll say, the last general election, was that artificial?
Yeah, that's $100 million question, isn't it, Tony? Really, I mean, to be fair, Sinn Féin, if you look at local elections, they've had a steady growth in popularity over a number of years. They got up to just over 15% in 2014, and as you rightly say, down to 9.5% in 2019. Is that the true figure? It feels like something in the middle, but we don't know exactly where that is. It was, and David Cullinan, the Waterford TD, talked about it being a difficult day at the office, and that's true. Dublin City Council, you know, they went from 16 seats, the largest party, to 8, single, 6 down to 4. Dunleary Rathdown, they went from 3 to 0. They had come from 0. They'll be disappointed to go back down. And again, biggest party in South Dublin, 9 seats down to 6. That replicated around the country, Donny. I'm not going to go into all of them, but if you look at Cavan, for example, four councillors down to 1, 6 candidates, just by comparison, Into alone has won, the Conservative Republican Party in Cavan. No seats in Offaly. Fair enough, they have done much better in Donegal and Waterford. They'll be happier. The visibility piece, Tony, Sinn Féin always traditionally very visible on the ground. And I know, again, David Cullinan and also Larry O'Toole, I think, from his interview with you on Saturday, Donny, talked about the areas in which they were traditionally stronger. The turnout was very low, and they will be disappointed with that. And David Cullinan, again, talked about taking responsibility for not motivating people enough to come out and vote. So I guess there will be a lot of work put into understanding how that happened. Look, Donny, I think there's a series of reasons you could put forward, and people have been over the last few days, about why the vote has gone down to such an extent. I suspect each of them, there will be an argument why that's not the case. Like most things, Donny, I expect that it's a little bit of all of them. And some of them that's been put forward, for example, every party depends on its core vote, but you're looking to the floating voters to get you over the line in many cases. That floating voter, Sinn Féin had done very well to attract many of them up to now. In this election, it was the Greens that certainly took centre stage in that regard. You probably would say that where the dial is turned somewhat, only it's easier for big parties like Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael to weather it. You remember something similar had happened to Labour before, but to a greater extent, to be fair, than has happened to Sinn Féin. Now, nonetheless, that's there. Why the vote? I guess if you look at 2019 in comparison to 2014, Donny, people are better off in some places economically. Did those floating voters move away from Sinn Féin, who, after all, captured the anti-austerity mood very well in 2014? Was their message for 2019 clear enough? Maybe not. There's a series of other things, Donny. Again, whether their specific alternative policy communication in contrast to their opposition to government policy, whether that was clearly communicated well enough, I don't know. You'll know that some councillors did leave the party over the last 5 years. There were internal difficulties. Some of those did well as independents. You had the bullying claims, of course, over the last 5 years. That may have pointed to a culture that alarmed some voters. Again, victims of sexual abuse had raised questions about party culture. You have questions about campaigning on Brexit. Probably less the Brexit piece, I suppose, Donny, as the all for 2 years now. Of course, that's a two-way street, and the DUP play a part in that too. But I think maybe for those people who are minded to look north, some will and some won't, the fact that people feel that Northern Ireland didn't have a voice in the Brexit situation. Again, who knows, Donny? It may be some of those or all of those played into the loss of the Sinn Féin vote.
John, in parlance that could be used on other items, is it overreaction, too early for Mary Lou to be considering her position?
I would think so, Donny, certainly. I would think so. It's very, very early. You know, when you have a change of leadership, you know, you will have a kind of a period in which that needs to settle down. And again, I was very interested in Dave Cullinan's interview where he said, look, all of the TDs and representatives, you know, we all have to be leaders in that regard. So I think it's probably not healthy or wise to look at her leadership at this stage. But she will be disappointed, and at the end of the day, you know, as they say, the buck stops with the boss. So she certainly won't be happy, but certainly I don't think there would be any sense of people wanting a leadership replacement. No, not at all.
No, I couldn't see now, and I can tell you for a fact she was visibly you know, upset and disappointed in at the RDS on Saturday. I was actually talking to her there, and you could see it and you could hear it in her, like, she was genuinely, I think she had herself fortified to the extent of, oh, we're not going to do as well as we did, but I don't think they were expecting to drop as many seats as they did. And I suppose, John, to carry the point on into the EU, because they couldn't mobilise the vote for their councillors in the Dublin region, that had the knock-on effect of Lynn Boylan being in the position she's in.
Yes, I mean, you're going to, well, I was going to say, you're going to, you're seeing some challenges there, certainly, and Lynn Boylan is the casualty, certainly. I don't think many people would have predicted that beforehand. In the other two constituencies, there's certainly still Sinn Féin candidates very much in the running and probably would expect to see two elected. They will be disappointed with Lynn Boylan's elimination. Just to the point you made about Mary Lou MacDonald, I think you're right, the party did, and the party representatives, I think, before the election certainly would have been of the view that they wouldn't do as well as they had done in the past, because they did particularly well. But she will be disappointed overall, and she will be particularly disappointed in Lynn Boylan losing her seat.
John, I suppose before we close it out, and can I thank you so much for your analysis and your help, and you're a most valued member of the team here now at Near FM, and that we will be drawing on your expertise on an ongoing basis, let me assure you. Based on what you've seen from, 12 o'clock, half 12, 1 o'clock on Saturday, right up until today, I think speculation of an early election might be premature. I don't see, yes, Micheál Martin will come away the happier, but not happy enough to decide he's going to pull the plug. And I don't think, based on the percentages that you were after throwing out there, that Leo will be running up to have a chat with Michael D. Higgins anytime in the near future.
No, I think that the value of local elections often, Tony, is to try and identify potential Dáil candidates in particular areas you want to do well, in those areas that you believe will make the difference. And I certainly don't think there's enough of a move for either of the two big parties to want to make anybody too bullish, that's for sure. It is very hard to predict. Fianna Fáil will be marginally happier. If you look at the stated reason why we haven't had an election up to now, the parties have talked about Brexit. I suppose if it becomes clearer where we're going, Tony, even to no deal, I mean, the government may feel that it's time for the certainty of an election later in 2019. Would an election change anything? How is it going to go? That will take brains greater than mine now, Tony, certainly to decide, is it worth going? I mean, otherwise you're into 2020. And if you remember again from your interesting interview with Finian McGrath on Saturday, he felt that was more likely. So it'll be very interesting now to see when the dust settles, where are we going with that? I felt with some of the government representatives on interviews over the last couple of days, that there did seem still to be some sense of going toward the late 2019 election. I really couldn't call that one, Tony. There's lots of pros and cons to that.
Yeah, and I mean, the other side of it is party activists and candidates themselves, they don't want to be knocking on doors, they don't want to be out campaigning in bad, cold, wet weather. People don't want to be opening their doors and letting the heat out, if you want to be actually practical about it as well. John, before I let you go, and I'm very grateful to you for your contribution today and indeed all over the weekend and prior to that, cast your eye briefly across the water. It was a strange weekend. Labour and the Conservatives got some kicking.
It was a very strange weekend. Probably, well, we say strange in the context of how you would expect normally British elections to go, but probably not strange in the sense that, to be honest, Tony, we probably had a sense of where it was going anyway. You're looking at, the Brexit Party taking 32% of the vote in 29 seats. from a standing start. You know, I think they were really only put together about 6 weeks ago. Effectively, they're taking UKIP seats and they're taking some of the Conservative seats, who a lot of Conservative voters, certainly hard Brexiteers, have gone in that direction. The Liberal Democrats, of course, 16 seats is a success. Labour, 14% and 10 seats, will be very disappointed. But without doubt, I mean, the story is Conservatives relegated to fifth, 9% of the vote in just four seats. Hard to believe, really, but that is the huge change that the machinations of Brexit have brought to the UK. You talked about interesting times last week, only it certainly is. Interesting in Northern Ireland too, of course, three female candidates took the three Northern Ireland European election seats, the DUP, Diane Dodds, Sinn Féin's Martina Anderson, and Alliance leader Naomi Long. So in terms of gender politics, that was interesting. And just to go back on that subject to the local elections, I see in Leary Ratdown for the first time ever has a gender balance of 50-50 split between female and male candidates. So there's an interesting story there.
It surely is. And I suppose the other side of it, John, is, you know, before, and we have seen him, and of course he's very triumphalist and very good at beating his chest and making all the, what he believes is right noises for his grassroots support, Nigel Farage, at the weekend, and demanding now that they be part of the negotiation team, no less. But it should be borne in mind that for, and you're quite right, of course, every statistic and number you gave is 100% correct. But when you line up the people out of the elected MEPs in Britain and Northern Ireland, Scotland and Wales, or should I say England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland, and when you divide them into two camps, Remain and Leave, the Remain side have more MEPs.
Yeah, that's an interesting subject, only because actually you look at those results in Britain. Actually, you can analyse them in a few different ways, and I think certainly if you kind of look at them down the middle, I think what it does is it brings back into focus again what we said a week ago. The big story in Britain is how hugely polarised they are, and their political opinion is very evenly split. I think probably in terms of if you were to run another vote over there, which I don't believe will ever happen, I think you probably would be marginally on the Remain side. But again, would it be enough to be definitive? And of course, if you were to do that, I guess that plays into the Brexiteer's hand, saying, well, if you have second referendum, we're exactly in the place you were, so why not have a third one? And you could go on and on and on forever. So the interesting thing, I suppose, that would strike me is that while Nigel Farage and the Brexit Party have all of the wind in their sails at the moment, I wonder whether there's an unintended consequence, Tony, whether that more likely no deal, I mean, I think we have to be honest and say no deal now has become more a likely outcome the way things have gone. But I wonder, will that push people in Westminster to again coalesce around absolute hardened opposition to no deal, and whether you know that Brexit party win will actually stiffen the resolve of people who are determined not to let no deal happen. That'll be worth watching.
Well, it will, and I suppose, in fairness, John, before I let you go, it has to be said as well, even from this remove, I'd say the knives are out for Jeremy Corbyn already.
Yeah, there was an interesting piece in the media recently, only over the weekend, and it looked at all of his electoral failures, and people are saying, you know, why is it not a legitimate question to ask whether he should go? I don't think he will. I think he probably has enough support to keep him there. But I think in terms of the Labour performance, I think you would have to say the amount of mixed messages and the lack of clarity, I think it's fair to say, of their position in relation to Europe, I think has damaged them quite a lot. You know, the one thing about the Brexit Party, it makes it easier when you have a very clear message. It may not be the most positive of messages, but it's a lot easier to communicate. I think Labour very much got themselves in a bit of a muddle communication-wise. And I see their Emily Thornberry, their Shadow Foreign Affairs Minister, again talking about a second vote. I wasn't as clear that that's what she had said before. So again, you know, it hasn't been the clearest of communication, and that seems to have, that really seems to have played against them.
Yeah, and I suppose on a lighter note, John, I heard somebody in the British media yesterday saying that a news flash that Jeremy Corbyn had been taken to hospital for an operation in relation to hemorrhoids, which he got from sitting on the fence. And I think, in fairness, you know, it's absolute turmoil. I mean, we often look at our own political system here and things going on, and indeed we've had the Maria Bailey controversy over the weekend, but you know, when we compare ourselves to what's going on over there, maybe we're not that bad after all, John.
Well, I think to be fair to all concerned politicians here, I think everybody has tried to be as responsible as possible when it comes to the very serious impact on Ireland of Brexit. And to be fair, I think people have not tried to play politics here, I guess, which is a compliment to them, but it also shows the seriousness of what we're dealing with. Certainly in the UK, it's been a very, very difficult road, and you're seeing things, seeing developments there, I guess we never thought.
That is very, very true, John. We're losing you on the line there, but John, can I thank you again for taking time out this afternoon to throw your eagle eye over the proceedings at the weekend. We will talk to you again very shortly. That is Near FM's political analyst, John Morgan. John, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.